who introduce our main speaker for this evening. It's John from San Diego. My friend John. Give him hell.
Give him hell. I'm John, an alcoholic. And hopefully later you can understand why I use my name as John. My real name is Juan. Sammy, where are you? Okay. I remember somebody in a meeting that I used to go to that used to say the same thing. And the way I came into this program, as angry as I was, I asked him to sit in the front. But I'm not going to do that today. Hopefully, maybe later on you'll understand why I changed my name from Juan to John. Because I had been just released from prison, and the first meeting that I walked into was filled with nothing but white people. And I figured, well, the only way I'm going to be accepted here is if I change my name. And there was other reasons that hopefully you'll understand as the meeting goes on. I have been released from prison about 3 days ago, and the system ordered me to go to meetings like this. And I was having a really hard time dealing with public. I really didn't think I was ever going to be understood. My life has been like this. My father, I'm glad to, I have some very special people here that meant a lot in my recovery. The guy that's from out of town was my first sponsor, and he's responsible for me getting sober. You're all responsible for me staying sober. But I was born in Mexico, in Tijuana, years ago, 1945, and my mother was a Mexican citizen, but my father was an American citizen, Mexican, but born in the United States. If anyone knows about citizenship problems, as long as you have one of your parents being a citizen, you automatically become a citizen. And so I was born in Tijuana, and I always claimed to be an American citizen, not knowing that I had never been registered to be in the United States, even though the government from here was helping in my education. So I was raised by my grandparents, along with a whole bunch of other dysfunctional uncles and aunts. So I had a whole lot of anger that I didn't know how to deal with, and I honestly didn't know that it was fear, that it was just afraid of being lonely, so I'd rather be angry than anything else. So I masquerade all my other feelings with anger. I continue to be raised in Tijuana by my grandparents. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't fit anywhere. So I took up on sports a lot, and I let out all my anger in sports, and I became very good at it. It was in 58, around 58 that I was for the first time introduced to drugs and alcohol. We were on our way in a train to play that way down in Mexico City, and I became very, very good at sports. Unfortunately for me, at that time, I didn't know what to do with myself. So we came in contact with the military from Mexico, and I was introduced to alcohol and drugs at the time. And for some reason, it was a whole new way of living for me. I felt so comfortable at being feeling high that I abused alcohol. Once we came back into Tijuana, I had made some contacts already in the military, and I became so involved in trafficking drugs and alcohol, and alcohol too. I'll tell you, but in a few minutes, drugs just made me feel different. I was married for the first time at the age of 18. Because there was something that I just needed in my life to not feel alone anymore. And I abused that relationship. I had two children with my first wife. And I was pushed into working by my grandfather, because now that you're a grown up and have a family, you're supposed to provide. But working was not something that I feel too comfortable with. So I started to meet people. My first job was and in those times everything was illegal. I got involved with three lawyers. They were crooked, and we opened up. By that time, I was a very violent person, always was armed. And we opened up three marriage and divorces offices in Tijuana. I hope none of you got married then. Because your marriage is no good. But the thing about it is that I became to get contacts with people that are kind of shaky, and it was at that time, this has been recorded. No, he approaches me and he says, I said, no bad words, no four words. And that's how I came into this program. There wasn't two words without a cuss word in my language. And my sponsor then, God bless him, for some reason, he never fired me. Thanks, John. But I got these contacts with government officials and very high-ranked custom agents, and we became a little gang that was feared by, well, I no way will join any gangs now. Everybody's getting killed. But at the time, if anybody got hurt, then there was nobody else but people will look at us like it's probably those four guys. The other three guys were mellow. They were attorneys. They had an education. The violent person was me, and I'm glad that's over. So I earned a reputation that that wasn't too nice. It wasn't too good. While getting all this reputation and opening this marriage and divorce places, contacts just grew and grew to where we were in control of a lot of government officials, including customs at the border. And but then, during those times, alcohol that they sell here was prohibited in Tijuana, so we control all the main street, all the bars in Tijuana, and warehouses of liquor that supplied all the bars in Tijuana. I had access to it, and it got to a point to where I really liked the feeling of alcohol in my system, that it became kind of a pain in the ass, because you got to be watching your back at all times in any place that you go. So walking around with security guys, armed security people, it became too risky. In 1969, for the first time, I was arrested in the United States, and they, every time I got arrested, and because it was either for drugs or alcohol, I always claimed to be an American citizen, and I was, and you'll find out later. In 1969, I was arrested for the first time in Chula Vista with a little amount of 120 pounds of cocaine. And so they made it a big deal, and I went to jail, and wouldn't admit to anything. It took all the money that I have saved illegally. And after 9 months of isolation, I finally worked out a deal that I was guilty of transporting merchandise and time served and 5 years parole, and you're out of jail. And but every move that I made, I always was being watched. During that time, and to this day, some relatives of mine are found dead or in difficult situations. Some fully alive without possibility of parole, and I don't feel too good about it. During the time that I started to work at getting sober and to straighten out my life, I walked into the first meeting, and the room was full, and I stayed on the back, and I hoping they would never call on me. I had a court slip that was being trailed by the alcoholic counselors at the courthouse, That was, about, what is it, 21, 22 years ago. And I kept going to meetings, and I kept working the steps, and I understood at the time I had stopped drinking. And you know, my life was getting better. And I realized, and I always argued, because for the first 3 years I took cakes, and it didn't bother me. Nothing really bothered me. I said, the fact was that the only requirement for AA membership is I started to stop drinking, and I had done that. But every time I went to a meeting, the only way that I'm going to put up with any of you was to smoke a joint before I walked in. And that way I can put up with Bob or anything that my sponsor wanted me to do. No, I'm just kidding. But life, for some reason, was getting better, and I was beginning to see the light. So I went through a whole lot of struggle getting sober, and then most of all at quitting drugs. I had just come out of the hospital after a cancer operation, and wasn't feeling too good, and didn't want to really feel too good. The drugs that they gave me at the hospital were keeping me very mellow, and so that's the way I liked it. And my sponsor then had the nerve to take me to this retreat where a lot of us here were going, and I met this man that I don't know where the hell he came from, but he helped me change my life. 3 years I went to see him every weekend, and he's far away, you know, but every week I would be there. I just didn't want to use anymore. So the first year that I was there, I was still very groggy from coming out of the hospital, and I slept all the way up there, and all the time that I was there, and my sponsor never said anything to me, and he never forced me to do anything, never. He just never. Never did anything that I can say, well, you know, I wanted to drop this man, I didn't want to listen anymore. The thing is that on the first, the second year that we went up there, and I was really, I had talked to Father Francis so many times over the phone after the first year that we were up there, that I just built up enough courage to talk to him, to where I got to do something, you know, somebody has got to help me stop this. So I pull into the monastery, and I used to drive this long, long black Continental. It's about a block long. And I put that car through a whole lot of miles going up there every week. But the second year I went up to Father Francis. As soon as I pull into the parking lot, the first person that I run into is Father Francis, not even out of the car. And I said to him, Father, I'd like to talk to you this weekend if I can. I knew that he was going to say, no, well, I'm too busy, I'm not going to have time. I said, well, how about tomorrow morning? weekend. All weekend talking every chance we had. We had a time to talk. And then 3 years, every week, till I built enough power to, and it wasn't mine. I know not that now. But for 3 years, I will go out to see him. And how you doing? He never pushed me. He never. I don't know. He just never said anything bad about me. It was all positive. Till my birthday, my belly button birthday came around, and those are the days that I would celebrate more than any other time. I would celebrate any time anyway, but when it was my birthday, my belly button birthday, I would take the time to really celebrate, and this time I went and stayed with him all weekend. And time went on. I was not using anymore. I had already stopped drinking, but I wasn't using anymore. And somehow he had some special thing for me on my 90 days. And on my way back, and leaving the desert, and I'm getting into the freeway, and I don't know what had happened, but all I could do, and I remember like it was yesterday, all I could do was cry and laugh and talk to myself. None of you have ever talked to yourselves, but I'm talking to myself, and I am so happy. I called my sponsor, and I asked, I tell him, I said, I'd like to get my 90-day token. I've already taken cakes for 3 years. I'd like to take my 90-day token. For the first time in my life, I have become honest. I had become to have feelings. They were always hidden by anger. But I felt so good, so I asked my God, I'd like to get my 90-day token. And it was the first time my sponsor answered me back, and I love you. And you know, it just felt so powerful, so strong that I arrived in San Diego, and I wasn't the same, and I have never been the same since. I remember. There's a seat in the front.
No, there. No, I'm sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry. Oh, shit. All behave. God damn. Once a fool, always a fool. It takes a little bit to get distracted. I used to go to meetings all the time, but always, my sponsor was always at that meeting, so I had no choice but to, maybe the word is change. You hear that? Change something. Sorry. So I started changing a little. You know, I was at a meeting in El Cajon over on Lincoln. It was a speaker's meeting, and that meeting is no longer there. And I remember coming from the parking lot after smoking some weed, and I walk in, and a guy from North Hollywood, his name was Jack. Never can forget that man. In a way, without really knowing this guy, I owe him a whole lot. You know, I would used to hear, well, you know, you stick around the meetings and somewhere, somehow, you're going to hear someone tell your story. And this fool took the nerve to really talk about me. Here I am, sitting way on the back, stoned out of my mind, and this guy starts talking about me. Well, about 15 minutes through the meeting, damn, I sober up. This guy, without him knowing, took a big, huge part in my sobriety. He still doesn't know. But I will always remember him. And he talked about, you know, how this program works. One drunk talks to another. And I have found out that that's true. That's how it works. Sammy and I have the pleasure of working together for the same company. So we sometimes take the time to talk to each other. Now here's, watch out, here's two Mexicans. Now you guys, let us come in here. Isn't that right, Richard? Richard's Mexican too. So don't be surprised if soon we're no longer a minority. Hell, nobody. Before you know it. Oh, no, no. But we're all the same. You know, I remember this guy that it was very important in my sobriety. He's no longer with us, or at least not yet. He was very instrumental in my sobriety, and I owe a lot to him. God bless him. I hope that someday he'll be okay. Anyway, let me tell you about why and how it became that I changed my name. I told you that my father was born in this country. My mother was Mexican. And they died when I was just a few months old. Well, all my life I had fought your system, claiming that I was an American citizen. And I still hold to that. Well, I have tried to legalize my citizenship by doing whatever is necessary. And I retain an attorney, and we have done everything possible. You know, there was a time when I didn't want to be in this country. I didn't want to have anything to do with any of you. I just needed to collect some money from you. and that was it. Then I'm out of here. But I stayed long enough to realize that this too is my country. Well, I hired an attorney, and during the paperwork and all that, this lady, I don't want to call her what I think, but this lady, between all the papers that she started fixing, she sent for my FBI record. And instead of sending it to her office, having him send it to her office, she sent it to my address. And a couple of days later, the FBI came and picked me up. And by then, I was already married. The best thing that ever happened to me, other than getting sober, is my wife. She went and bailed me out, because the maximum of allowed in immigration of $10,000, because they figure, well, you're gonna run anyway, so we just keep your $10,000. But no, I'm here because you guys helped me to live life, to enjoy what I have now. So I got bailed out immediately, I think it was by the following day, and have been fighting since. I hired a different attorney, and we kept on going to court, and this has been going on for four or five years. While we were in court, there is no way that my attorney or the courts or anybody else or myself or anybody could gather enough paperwork to make the courts believe in me. So they subpoenaed three of my relatives. Old, they're very old people, 80-something. Thank God they're still alive. And the judge believed in their testimony, and I was declared an American citizen just shortly. So I guess I'm here to stay. my dear sponsor then used to tell me, well, you know, you everybody here serves. Some serve as a bad example, and you're one of them. But then I kept on working at it, and I'm not all that bad anymore. I really believe that I have straightened up my life by working at this. I didn't do very much. I still don't do very much. I just keep going to meetings. Because let me tell you that the last time I was in court for a DUI, they kept postponing my court date for my court sentencing for 3 years, the same 3 years that I was going up to see Father Francis. And the counselors at the courthouse were keeping records of all my attendance to these meetings. And I still had a court slip for 3 years. Shit. Oh, sorry. I'm glad it wasn't recorded when I first came in. In the day of my sentence, finally after 3 years, and I have stopped drinking, I have stopped using, I have stopped everything. My court date came up, and they called everybody. Here we go again, man. These guys are prejudiced. They're leaving me for last. The interpreter, everybody's gone. Everybody's gone. It's the... What was his name? I can't remember his name. One of the counselors. It was the counselor, the bailiff, and the judge. And they call my name, and the judge stands up. Oh shit. And he says, follow me. Damn, not again. I gotta do time again. So they started going down this hallway with the bailiff behind me. There's nowhere, don't know where to go. So he opens his chambers, and I walk in with him, and the bailiff behind me, and he says, sit down. Oh shit, it's too late. I don't want to sit down. I can't run if I'm sitting down. So he says, here's your sentence. You keep doing what you're doing. You keep going to meetings. Bring your friends. And work the steps. And I'm still waiting. This can be all. This has happened to me too many times. And then he says, I had my keys on his desk. And of course, I'm not too stupid. See, in my keys, I had my 90-day token. And it's facing up. I want to make sure that this guy sees it. And then he says, I'm just like you. You know who he is. So a lot of people that's involved in this society of drunks, you know, have changed my life. So how can I pay you? I have no way of paying you. I just gotta stay sober. I gotta help others. It's my job. Well, Father Francis was very instrumental on me becoming who I am. On the 4th of next month, my wife and I are getting married again. And Father Francis is coming to perform the ceremony.
me. So I got more and more, a whole lot more than I deserve. A whole lot. So how can I ever repay what this fellowship has done for me? I wish I could put it in money, but there's no money that I can ever, you know. All I ever did when I could was put a dollar in a basket that goes around. You know, where else can I get this kind of therapy for a buck? Life is now the most beautiful, most precious thing that I have. For those of you who have never tasted Mexican food, my wife didn't know, she had not. We don't have. I like to take everybody and just bring them to my house. You know, we're gonna have a lot of food to eat. But no, don't worry, honey. They just talk big. No. You know, it was here when my wife took a cake here, and then I took a token, and when they give you a token, or not even a token, they don't give you anything. They just I took a congratulations from the group when I took 18 years here, and I made a mistake. A guy that used to go to the retreat with us, and I don't go to the retreat anymore, used to sit on the back. What's his name? Lloyd? Al, yeah. I made the mistake of saying, blabbering. I said, well, only 1 minute, or what do they give you to talk when they give you only a minute or two? I said, well, shit, that's not enough time. So he approaches me during the intermission. He said, well, you can come here and speak. I said, man, I just said, you know, it's a very short time. You guys got to give at least 2-3 minutes. No, I'll put you on the list. And I've been on the list ever since. And by the way, I missed the first time that I was supposed to come and speak to you. But then my wife goes to an early meeting to one of the guys with Randy. And then Randy introduces me to Felix. And somehow I got involved to where now I got to stand up here and talk to you. And you know, the funny thing about it is that we all talk about how nervous we are to get up here. And my wife gave me a few minutes alone this afternoon, and I realized that, well, shit, what is there to be nervous about? If I make a mistake before the meeting is over, you're going to forget about it. Everybody's just as sick as I am. So why get up nervous? Well, except for Bob. Bob is all right now. No. See, it's funny. how the hell am I supposed to be laughing now? See, my whole life has changed, and I owe it to you. I never did anything to earn all I got. Life is... Who was it? The concrete guy. What's his name? Steve Mueller. He's not here. They used to stop me all the time because my language wasn't so great. So, hey man, get out of there. Still Mueller gave me a break that thing. You know, this is kind of irritating. No. My wife, my wonderful lady, she gave me a little pillow many years ago, because she always does it. She's wonderful at it. She says, it's irritating. It's irritating when you talk while I'm interrupting. Well, anyway, Steve Mueller gave me a tape years ago about this Latin guy. It says that I came to America to stop drinking, and you beautiful people taught me how to live. I want to thank you, and I love you, and thank you for allowing me in your meeting.